We will go ahead and start, and if there's others, why, that's fine. You're not going to bother me by getting up, walking around, whatever needs to be. I've just going to take the liberty of commending you that you're here today, even though I have no part as far as the organization or anything of the meeting. I was privileged, and I don't know the exact year, but 1958, 1960, somewhere in that vicinity, of spending the week between Christmas and New Year's with Roy Harris out in Colorado Springs. There was a meeting similar, but not the same as this one. It was for everyone, but Roy was instrumental in getting several of the young men together, and we would have meetings during the day, and then after the evening service, while we would sit down and have Bible studies, talk with him. And I appreciated it then, and I greatly appreciate you taking the time, the effort, the vacation from school or work or whatever, as far as coming and attempting to further your knowledge, your abilities as far as the work of the church is concerned. That's active. And I know that you give up vacation, you give up visiting with friends, you give up family, you give up a lot of things. And I think it's extremely important, as far as you're concerned, as far as the church is concerned, that you do it. And I greatly appreciate it. The church is extremely important. We have to have strong leadership. We have to have knowledgeable leaders as far as the church is concerned. And even though I'm one of the leaders, I don't profess to be all that smart when it comes to spiritual things. I still have a tremendous amount to learn. The subject that I've been assigned today is false teaching. How I got that particular subject, I don't know. And I feel somewhat out of place, because I think that there are far better individuals to cover the area of false teaching than I. But we're going to try. False teaching is something that is extremely serious. It's not fun and games. And it's not to be taken lightly. And because of it, people's gonna lose their soul. And you take some of the images, the mental images that are portrayed as far as the Bible is concerned about an eternal hell, and the pain and the suffering and the darkness and everything that is given concerning that environment. And it is something that is deadly serious. And it is something that each one of us needs to pay considerable attention to. I want all of you, there is a verse that I think that is extremely important, and a verse that we need to consider today. And it's a verse that every one of you can quote, I think. And it's a verse that ought to be, have preeminence as far as our mind is concerned. We're talking today as far as leadership, elders, deacons, evangelists, this type of individuals within the church. And you're trying to prepare yourself to take that particular position. And I commend you for it. And I want to emphasize one particular thing. In Deuteronomy, the 6th chapter and verse number 5. And I want all of you to turn to that, if you will. And I want all of us to repeat it at the same time. Because I think this is the underlying key to our work within the church. Deuteronomy 6 and 5. It's also in the New Testament, Mark 12:30, also in Matthew. All right, everybody have it? Let me turn to it so I quote it right. And thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thine heart, with all thy soul, and with all thy... I think that has to be the underlying element. There is a tremendous amount of false teaching that gets its spring from the fact of individuals that want the prestige, the pride, I'm the man of the cloth, I've got one of these mega churches, I'm well known within the United States or world or whatever it might be. The love for the Lord has to be first place. And if you have, and if I have, if we have, that particular element within our life, then false teaching is not going to play the tremendous down part as far as religion is concerned. Because if I'm wrong, I'll change. I don't want you believing something wrong. And I will go to any extremes to correct that. I love the Lord. I want to do what the Lord asks me to do. And with that underlying element, then we don't have the problems that we have with otherwise. First thing that I want to do today, and that is define false teaching. And before I give you my answers, I'm going to ask you. Define false teaching for me. I realize I put you on the spot. Yes. Okay. Something that's contrary. Somebody else. Okay. Speaking perverse things. He's talking. Okay. You don't have to, I will. Because I think that's what false teaching really gets down to. Anyone else? Well, let me go ahead here. I think, at least in my opinion, and don't get me wrong, I can be wrong, and if I'm wrong, I want you to correct me. But false teaching, I don't think, as described by the Bible and what we're talking about today, is somebody that stands up and misquotes a particular idea or whatever. I get up and have said in times past things that are in error. Now, why do I say, or why would you say, things that are wrong? It certainly wasn't intentional, but in my case, it probably was a lack of knowledge that I just simply didn't know. It may have been that I took somebody else's word for something, and I just repeated what somebody else had to say. And it may be that I was just talking off the top of my head, and I didn't have any basis for what I was saying. And I needed to say something, and that came to me, and I said it. I don't think that it is just a mistaken statement. Now, granted, it's wrong. Should it be corrected? Yes, if that's possible. But I don't think that that's the false teaching that he is referring to as far as the Bible is concerned. We'd like for you to turn, if you would, or at least realize that it's there, Acts the 18th chapter, verse number 26. And I think that you have an illustration of, and we're going to talk more about it in just a little bit, but this is an illustration that I think illustrates something that is a false teaching. And this concerns Apollos, and it concerns Priscilla and Aquila. And that is that Apollos was teaching John's baptism. Now, it was because that he didn't know any better, I think, because when he was told, we find later on as far as 1 Corinthians is concerned, I don't know where I wrote down that particular, I think there's several instances in 1 Corinthians where he went and he was commended and people believed concerning the preaching that was given by Apollos. Yes, he was teaching something that was wrong, and it was an intentional thing on his part, because that's what he knew. But I think that there are two things that has to be with false teaching, and I'll gladly take questions and comments. But I think that it is an intentional action, and it has to be something that is salvation related. And what I mean by that is that it's not my traditions, it's not my ideas that make something false. Now, I don't want to get into a lot of questions and comments, but can a woman wear slacks to church? Is that a tradition, or is that false teaching? And I put it in the area as far as it is not false teaching. That is my own conviction, that is my feeling, that if it was, it's not, but if it was, I would put it in that particular area. It's not necessarily salvation related. You're not going to lose your soul over it. Do you use the King James Version of the Bible only? Or if I get up and say I'm reading from the New International, or is that a reason to level a charge at me? You're teaching falsely. And no, I don't think that's what he has reference to. And I think that there is a lot of things that we can classify in that particular area. And as we go through, I think that if you look at the scripture, you're going to find that false teaching is particularly, it's intentional, but it relates to a salvation issue. And I'm just going to pick one out here, 2 Timothy, the second chapter, verse number 18. They said that the resurrection is already past and overthrow the faith of some. Well, is that a salvation issue? Yes, it is. Because if you don't believe that the resurrection happened as far as Christ is concerned, well, what's the use of continuing? Or if there's not going to be, if you're not going to be raised, if when you die, you're dead all over. You're just like Rover. Is there no hereafter? Yes, that's a salvation issue. And he specifically zeroed in on that. And he says they have overthrown the faith of some in that particular endeavor. Now, another thing that I would put in that particular area is one cup. Some might disagree with me. But, is that a salvation issue? I don't put it there. Some people would. The elders have a responsibility, and it is a tremendous responsibility to make sure that all of the teaching that is done is correct. And one of the qualifications in Titus, the first chapter and verse number 9, for the appointment of elders, one needs to be able to use sound doctrine to refute that which is false. And that is a job. It's hard. That means you have to know what's going on. And you have to be able to explain it and tell other people using the Bible why and how a particular thing is wrong. It's very challenging. Acts 20th chapter and verse number 30. There are talks concerning the elders and, at Ephesus, he calls them to Ephesus. And he particularly says, of your own self shall men arise, speaking perverse things to draw away disciples after them. Now this was intentional. It was individuals who had knowledge. They knew what was going on. They were elders. And he says, from your own selves, men are going to arise speaking perverse things to draw away people after them. And it was not something that was accidental. It was not something that a mistake happened. It was something that was planned. It was something that was, well, intention is about the best word that I can use, I think. But it wasn't just a mistake. And that's one of the things that I think that we need to draw a contrast of. Yes, mistakes are wrong. Yes, mistakes need to be corrected. But it doesn't fall in the area of false teaching, I don't think, as way as the Bible defines it. Now, with that said, I want to stop. Questions or comments?
Oh. I heard that recently. I think there's another good example in how ties into what you mean relates to salvation. First example I remember is Acts 15:1, where it says, unless you circumcise that the man of Moses, you cannot be saved. The less man stops troubling the church, his salvation is put on the line. Whether or not you accept it will determine your salvation. That's the way of salvation is not
others. I'm making it too easy on me now.
Brent?
Yeah. There is a verse, and you give me just a minute here. If you go to 2 Peter, the 2nd chapter, verse number 3. Or let's go with number 2 and 3. It says, many shall follow their pernicious ways, by reason of whom the way of truth shall be evil spoken of, and through covetousness. They shall with feigned words make merchandise of you, whose judgment now of a long time lingereth not, and their damnation slumbereth not. And he continues. The reason that he gives at that particular place is covetousness. That is the reason this particular thing, and I think that's probably a pretty good answer for a lot of the reasons why that it is done. I covet the pride. I covet the prestige. I covet the notoriety. I covet disciples following me. I covet, and you can continue. But I think that's one of the underlying reasons why the three is false teaching. Tom. No, I don't think so.
I think that's it for the comment as well. Deuteronomy 13 is a great teaching of the false prophet. God says, don't listen to him, your heart to him, because the Lord is proving you to know whether you love the Lord your God all your heart.
Okay. Very good. Okay. If you will go to 2 John, the 1st chapter, and, Second John, the 1st chapter, and verses 9 through 11. I think that he, and we're still working on, the definition as far as false teaching. In this particular place, he says, whosoever transgresseth and abideth not in the doctrine of Christ hath not God. He that abideth in the doctrine of Christ, he hath both the Father and the Son. Now, he gives two things here. He, whosoever transgresses and abideth not. Now, the penalty is severe, but I continue to think that it's probably an intentional action, and it's something that has to be salvation related. It's not a mistake. And then in that particular instance, he says, in verse number 10, if there come any unto you and bring not this doctrine, receive him not into your house, neither bid him Godspeed, for he that biddeth him Godspeed is taker of his evil deed. Now the penalty for me being a false teacher is that if I come to a congregation and want to distribute my false teaching, you're not to let me. And you're not to commend me, you're not to, encourage me in that particular endeavor. Now I don't necessarily think that it implies that this particular place that you're to be unkind to me. The church in many instances was in people's homes. I don't know where it specifically forbids an individual to come into my personal house. I don't know that. I am assuming to a certain extent that it means a congregation. And to the extent that an individual would not be allowed to teach, he would not be allowed to just because of the doctrine that he is advocating, that he would not be encouraged, he would not be commended, it would be just the opposite. And I'll stop there. Questions or comments? Yes, sir. Okay. What's coming like? I see John Pecan sitting there. John, what's cunning like? Give me an example. Okay. Why? Okay. Sly and crafty fox, if you generally talk about, there's a reason for that statement. Now, cunningly devised. Devised is something that is planned. It is not just a mistake that was made. It's plain. It's on purpose. Very good. That's right. And that's the reason why I say in the false teaching area, I, at least in my mind, two standards. Intentional, and it's gotta be salvation related. Yes, sir. I think that's, and we're gonna cover that here in just a little bit. I think that is false teaching, and it has to be false. Because as far as my reasoning is concerned, that is not part of the Lord. Okay? Okay. Then I'll leave it at that as far as the definitions. And I want to go as far as example for some false teaching that I at least I consider to be false teaching. And I'm going to start at the very beginning and you go back to Eve and the devil. And the devil knew exactly what he was doing, and it was intentional, it was planned, and it was cunningly devised, and he said not. And that was false. That's an example. 1 Timothy, the 4th chapter, and verse number 3. And we're gonna get to this in a little bit also, but the Catholic Church has been instrumental in doing many, many things that is contrary to the Bible. And one of them in 1 Timothy, the 4th chapter and verse number 3, is forbidding to marry. That is a false doctrine. God, at the very beginning, created man and woman, and he told them that they were to have sex, and I'm being blunt, and reproduce. Now, it was not within God's original thinking that a man should be single. That he created woman for the man, and we're specifically told so that there would not be fornication. And for an institution to come and say, you cannot marry, is 100% opposed to what the Lord intended. Now, I'm not saying that an individual can't remain single. They can. But not commanded by an institution. So.
Dr. Especially where, when it is just the office, because the Lord commanded for the office. And then just the office is
Another one that I think is important, and that's in Titus, the first chapter in verse number 11. And that goes along with the qualifications as far as an elder is concerned. And he's talking about the elder being apt to teach and having the abilities to refute individuals that bring false teaching. And he specifically says in that particular instance, their mouths must be stopped. Now this is the end result of people bringing false teaching in as far as the church is concerned. Their mouths must be stopped. The oversight, and I'm including evangelists, I'm including elders, have to have the abilities to tell the congregation that it is wrong and why that it is wrong. That the propaganda that they are giving, is not correct. And it has to be stopped basically in its tracks once that it has started. It cannot be allowed to do. Else the whole body is susceptible to be going down the drain. Okay, another one that I have is in Titus 1:10, also Acts the 15th chapter, verse number 1, where he's, the Judaizing teachers, where they said that you must be circumcised in order to be saved. Here again, it comes back to a salvational type issue. If you're not circumcised, you can't get to heaven. And that was one of the false doctrines at that particular time that had to be quenched. And this is what he spent an awful lot of time doing. Not an example, but how it's dealt with, Galatians, the first chapter, verses 6 through 9. He specifically says, though we are an angel from heaven, preach any other doctrine or gospel unto you than what we have preached unto you, let him be accursed. And he reemphasizes it. He again says basically the very same thing. Though we are an angel from heaven, bring any other doctrine. Let it be a curse. 1 Timothy, the first chapter, verses 3 through 7. Specifically, pointing out to the evangelist. He says, teach no other doctrine. Now, why is that so important? The Lord established His church. It's His. It's not mine. It's not yours. And it's not somebody else's. It's His. He is the one who established what was going to be taught. And He says, this is what I want to be taught. This is the only thing I want to be taught. And you're not to teach anything else. Now, that's plain, it's harsh, it's blunt. But that's what he said. And it's his. And I have to accept that, and I have to go with that. John. Okay. Very good. On the false doctrine, I think in the Old Testament you have an example. 1 Kings 12th chapter, verses 29 through 30. And this is the instance as far as the dividing of the kingdom, Jeroboam and Rehoboam. and Jeroboam tells the people, he says you can go down and worship at Dan and Bethel, and I'll set up some idols, and it's too far to go up to Jerusalem to worship. And if you'll go down to verse number 33, he says he devised it in his own heart. Now, that's false teaching. He devised it within his own heart. You can go to Dan, you can go to Bethel and worship. There's no problem. You're still worshiping. Just don't go to Jerusalem. The very early, as right after the church was established, there began to be problems regarding false doctrine. And as I told you earlier, the Catholic Church was the one that was the instigator of the problems. Holy water, Lent, infant baptism, those were the three of the earlier ones that came along within just a few years of the establishment of the church. And it was the transgressing, it was the abiding not within the gospel that we give. Also in that particular place, Acts 20th chapter and verse number 28, it says, it's going to come from some of you, indicating the eldership. And, there had to be a hierarchy that was established in Constantinople and Rome, and Ephesus, and Alexandria, Egypt. There were bishops that were set up over other areas to oversee. It wasn't local anymore. And this is where that you have the beginnings of false doctrine. And it's my next point that I would like to make is their false teaching today. And as far as I'm concerned, the answer is absolutely yes. There is. And it has to be opposed. Now I've got some examples. And of course I want you all to agree with me. But you don't have to. I've got and sadly, within the churches of Christ, and I use that loosely, there is false doctrine. And not everybody that wears the name Church of Christ is true. You've got sprinkling versus immersion. You've got the return of Christ on earth versus meeting him in the air. He's gonna come back and he's gonna to reign in Jerusalem for 1,000 years. The kingdom, is it in the future or is it present? The confession of sin. Now, I have heard within the churches of Christ, come forward and confess your sin. That's not what the confession is all about. It's a confession of Jesus Christ. It's not a confession of sin. Yes, you may have sinned and you may need to confess it, but in initial obedience, it's the confession of Christ, not the confession of sin. Tithing versus giving, as you've been prospered. The communion, is it only for special events, or is it done every first day of the week? Instrumental music versus a cappella music. Spiritual gifts today. That all of a sudden you are endowed with a power that you don't control, and you begin speaking. Mutual edification versus the youth minister, the music minister, the preaching minister, and you go ahead. Those are false. It's not within the context of the Bible. And they have to be opposed. Now, I am not suggesting, and I don't want anybody to say that that you don't do things, you attempt to do things easy. You don't do them hard at the very beginning. You got to talk to the individuals and maybe they'll change. But if it doesn't change, if it's repeated, and it's leading people astray, it has to be counted. It has to be stopped. Now, I'm going to stop. Right now. Questions, comments? John. Kurt. And there are some things, John, and I'm not trying to minimize anything, but there are some things and there are some people who are the dead set in their traditions that they think is absolute fact that can be adjusted one way or the other. They're not willing to give and, they see it as false doctrine, and sometimes we can give in areas of judgment and this case. Yes, sir.
You mentioned verses 1 and 2. And here Paul talks about, he can talk to the associates, and later on, he talks to the inspired chapter about that, and that all churches in my education learn from. If you don't know the doctrine, you're not going to refute. And how do you know someone needs to be refuted and not be
refuted? Oh, good. And we're going to stick to that next. John. That's right. It's not. Others. Okay, the next area that I'd like to go into is, why is false teaching so prevalent? And I think one of the big reasons that it is so prevalent is, let me stop there and go back. The Churches of Christ used to be known as Bible students. If there, and then I come from a small community. If there was people within the community that wanted to know Bible facts, they go to a Church of Christ individual because they generally knew the Bible. And I think one of the reasons why the false teaching is so prevalent today, just one, is that we've got lazy. We really don't want to admit it. We're far more comfortable listening to somebody talk and tell us what's right and what's wrong rather than studying ourselves. And we really don't know. We really don't understand. And we don't really see the reason why that we need to be upset. We become easy targets for false teachers just because we don't know. And the group that is assembled here today, you're going to hear a little bit later in the notes, but, you can't get lazy. It can't be. you have a responsibility, or you will have responsibilities, and you can't afford it, and the church can't afford it. The natural man wants to get rid of what makes him uneasy, and we talked about this a little bit as far as Tom's class is concerned, and I think Rick was the one that made the comment that you get people out of their comfortable zone. He called it out of tinkering maze or something on that order. and that's true. The natural individual does not want to be made uneasy and to look at the consequences of believing something is wrong. My dad believed it. Mom believed it. Good enough for them. Good enough for me. And false teaching is not all wrong. There's an awful lot of sound teaching, an awful lot of correct pieces that go with it. But you go back as far as Eve and devil is concerned, it only took this one little particle there to make a difference. And it's the same today. There's a lot of churches of Christ. Well, I'm going to use names, and I probably shouldn't use names, but Billy Graham. Billy Graham has a lot of good stuff to say. But there's some of the stuff that he says that is completely false. Now, there is a mixture of the good and the bad, and it's interwoven. It's cunningly devised, as we talked about a little bit earlier, and it leads people astray, and people don't lose their soul because of it. Another thing that I think that is so prevalent today, and I think it's within the church today, and that is that there are so many denominations, and we can take a pick, but we want to look at them. And we see that they're just growing by leaps and bounds. And we start to question, why are they growing? Why are the people just flocking to them? And we see the professionalism, we see the color, we see the attractiveness, the music, the rituals, the ceremony, and all of these things have an effect upon people, and it's the external that they're looking at, it's the pleasing of the senses, and the important thing, lying. And I think that's the reason. We want to be like everybody else. We want growth. We want members. If we have members, we have money. And with money, we can do things. And you call them, but you don't. You look at him with some of the other people that are just growing. And we want to be like them. Tell them back there and back. Probably. It's easy. Yes, it is. Richard, I think you had comments.
Well, even having growth, maybe not as a student, you can see a few of the students like that. There's so many people that throwing words and thinking they are lures to the lost and strife. The illusion is the ones that actually feel in the everyday life.
Yes. Jeremiah, the 5th chapter, and verse 20 through 31. The comment is made there, my people love to have it so. And I see that as one of the reasons why the church folks teaching today. The congregation would love to have it. Or at least some of them. And 2 Peter, the 2nd chapter, verses 1 through 3, it talks about perniciousness, or shamefulness, or the pleasing of the senses, or the lack of restraint as being the reason. Satan is working, and he's using people, and he's using what's available to him. And the counterfeit looks just as good as the genuine, and many people. In 2 Peter, the 2nd chapter, verse number 2, it says that the way of truth is going to be evil spoken up. And when we say that right, you can prove that it's right. Well, okay, so you're right. We're ridiculed, we're put down, treated lightly, cast to the side. It's people spoken of, it's not something that you portray. You know, the church is to be the pillar and the ground of the truth. The pillar and the ground, the ground is the foundation, and the pillar is what sets on it. It's to uphold the truth. But the way of truth, the pillar, righteousness, evil spoken of, because of individual thinking. And then the other one that I told you of just a few minutes ago in answer to a question, 2 Peter, the 2nd chapter, verse number 3, is due to covetousness. The praise of men, the prestige, his or her standing is more important than the truth. 2 Timothy, the 4th chapter, and verse number 3, the teachers that have, and it talks about people that have itching ears. This is the reason why that I think that false teaching is prevalent. Questions or comments before we go to another point? Yes, sir. Very good. He takes it pretty free. Okay. Thank you. Well, how does false teaching start? How does it continue? I guess I probably want to use a personal example, and that is that I think probably most of you, if not all of you, know that, I don't know, 2003, 2004, I had cancer. Cancer, as far as the prostate is concerned. I didn't know it was there. It was a regular checkup. The doctor did a PSA test, and he says, well, it's high. You come back in 3 months, 6 months, whatever it might be, and we'll do it again. And it went on for about a year, and it just kept going up. It's little bits. And he says, I really don't think that there's anything wrong. And it just kept going up little by little by little. And he says, I want you to go see a specialist. Well, I did. And these specialists came to the same conclusion. I don't think there's anything wrong. They said, look, do a biopsy. And he did a biopsy, and it came back as cancer. And I think that that's a lot of the way that false teaching works. It's something that you don't think about. It's something that happens on an extremely slow basis sometimes. And 2 Timothy, the second chapter, verse number 17, he talks about it as eating like a canker, and that's a cancer. And it's something that is slow. It's 2 Peter, the second chapter, verse number 1, privately, they shall bring in damnable heresies. Matthew, the 16th chapter, verse number 12, talks about leaven and yeast. Something that at least my mother, when she used yeast, she put it in the dough and threw a towel over the top of it in the dark so that it would grow and expand. It's the influence of something that is bad. Matthew, the 13th chapter, verse number 25, it's not talking about that specifically, but the example that I want is that the enemy came at night and sowed tares. It was not something that was just done right out in the open, but it was basically concealed for a long period of time. And then you have the very public part as far as false teaching. And in Acts the 20th chapter, verses 28 through 30, he calls them wolves. Now, I don't know very much about wolves. I know that they're big, and I know that they're strong, and I know that they have teeth that pull and shred, and they do a tremendous amount of damage. And it's more of a public, out in the open, in the daytime type thing that and they do it at night too, but wolves will attack in the daytime. And they generally attack the weaker, the hurt, the disease, the new member, the one that's not satisfied. Wolves have a pack mentality, that it's not one individual. Silently, it appears to be more of a one individual type approach. The wolves would indicate, at least to me, more than one, a pack getting together, doing tremendous damage. And individuals generally are very persuasive, they're smooth, they're well-liked, they're respected, they're thought of as smart, and they get a hold and they don't want to let it. Acts the 20th chapter and verse number 29. If you go, and I may be trying to draw too much out of that particular verse, but in Acts the 20th chapter, verse number 29, he says, "For I know that after my departing shall grievous wolves enter in among you, not sparing the flock." And I see that perhaps this may be outside influence, not necessarily within the congregation, wolves coming in. And then in verse number 30, I say of your own self shall men arise. The inside work that is going on. And I see both the outside and I see the inside aggression that is taking place against the Lord's body. Okay. Other questions, comments? Oh.
I need to comment more on prayer teaching.
No.
Romans 16, 17, and 18. I beseech you, brethren, mark them and solve divisions and churches and creative doctrines and worm and voiding. For they that are such serve not our Lord Jesus Christ with their own belly, and by good word and their speeches deceive the hearts of the people. And Colossians 4 goes with that. And Paul says, this I say, lest any man should beguile you with his righteousness.
Okay.
There's no
temptation. Okay, well, let's go to a different point here. My time's getting away from me. I didn't think I'd have enough material to go this long. How do you counteract false teaching? And I think one of the thing that I've got down there first is to teach repeatedly the truth. Prevention is a whole lot easier. And it's a whole lot better than trying to stop the cow after the gate's open. Because once the cow gets out, it's awful hard to get her back in. And, if you take care of the cow while she's in the barn, you got a whole lot better chance of doing whatever you need to do. And, I think one of the things that we really need to concentrate on is new members. They have to be taught. And they have to be able to know the difference. The second thing that I have down is teach repeatedly topics where false doctrine is commonly taught. I think we as elders, evangelists, leaders within the congregation need to continually bring up instrumental music versus a cappella. We need to bring up, when is the kingdom of Christ coming? Is it already here or is it going to be in the future? We need to approach these subjects and get people to thinking about them before, well, the kingdom's not going to be here for a long time, and he's going to come back to Jerusalem and reign for 1,000 years before this gets in their mind. We need to do the remedial, we need to do the preventive teaching before that happens. The second thing the third thing I've got written down here, I don't know various congregations that we on Wednesday night and on Sunday evening, afternoon, we assign various members topics, and and it's a discussion topic, and it's a lecture discussion, both basically I'm doing here, where people can ask questions and make comments, but they also have a responsibility to prepare. And I think that we as oversight need to take some of the members that are able and capable, and if we need to help them, we need to help them and sit down and help them as far as the material. But I think we need to assign topics to various individuals that they will come up with it themselves. It is not me as an elder that is saying, thou shalt not do, for this is wrong. But it is member XYZ coming to the conclusion, that's wrong. It doesn't follow what the Bible says. And I think that we need to do that. We need to read and study daily. I do. You do. We do. And it's not only us, it's the entire congregation. The responsibility lies with us. We can't take care of somebody else. We can encourage them. But I can take care of me. It's my willingness to do it. And if I'm not willing to do it, why would I try to get the congregation to do it? I'm supposed to be a leader. I'm supposed to be the one that provides the example. If you don't do it, how can you ask somebody else to do it? I don't mean to brag, and I want to bring personal things up only because I'm trying to illustrate a point. Some of you are in school, and I was baptized when I was, 13, thereabout, and it never sunk in with me for a long time. Yes, I lived right. I didn't do anything that was bad. I went to church. But it wasn't until I got in college that I decided that if I was going to do something, I'd have to get with it. I had a roommate. A roommate was horrible. He did things that I wouldn't dream of. But that roommate, I guess, probably helped me just a little bit. I would come back from class, and generally there was about an hour or so after class, and then there was meal for evening meal. And after the evening meal, then he would probably be gone for an hour or two after that. And I decided that I was going to use that particular time. I was going to go eat the evening meal, and I was going to come back. I didn't care if I had lessons that had to be gotten immediately or not. I decided that basically I was going to study. I didn't have anybody there. He was gone. And so I used that particular time. My approach probably was different than most people's approach. Because I looked at what I started to do was I questioned. Is baptism right or wrong? And what I set out to do was, I'm going to prove it to myself, one way or the other. And I think that's what you would have to do. If you're going to be a leader, and if you are going to teach other people sound doctrine, you're going to have to be able to prove it to yourself that this is absolutely true. And this is why that I believe what I believe. And that's how I started. And I think that for any individual that wants to go into leadership, I think that's what you're going to have to do. Not in necessarily the way that I did it. But you are going to have to prove to yourself first of all, that things are true. You can't take somebody else's word for it. You got the truth. And that's, you just got to prove to yourself that it's right. Timothy is a child. From the child he knew the scriptures, and that was due in part to his mother and his grandmother. And he was commended for that. Deuteronomy, the 6th chapter. Parents have a responsibility as far as their kids to teach, and we don't teach nearly as much as we need to teach. When you walk, and when you sit, and when you eat, and when you travel, and when you this, that, and the other thing, you teach. Now, that doesn't mean, at least in my perspective, it doesn't mean that in Matthew, the 1st chapter, and verse number 10, it says this. It means that when you're faced with a neighbor and they want to cheat, you tell your kids, cheating's not good, and we're not going to do it. And another thing as far as the relating of Tom's lessons, if there's questions, from individuals that are asked, you, at least my opinion is, you treat that as a parent would treat sex. You tell them what they need to know at that particular time. You don't need to tell them all the little details when they're 9 years old or 10 years old or 11 years old. When they ask a question, you answer. And you don't jump the whole back of hay or feed or whatever it might be in their lap at that particular time. That's my opinion. Ezekiel the 33, or chapter 33, verse number 6, he says, he talks about the watchman on the wall. And the watchman on the wall at that particular time, they had huge walls and they posted people up on top to make sure that the enemy, wasn't coming and that they were going to be safe. And he draws the application, and I think it has a specific application as far as the leadership of the church is concerned. And that is that you're a watchman on the wall. And he says, either you warn the people and you tell them, or you're going to be held accountable for it. And that is not a responsibility that you can take lightly. Now, that doesn't mean that they are going to believe you and accept you. That doesn't mean that they are going to prepare. They may not believe a thing you're saying. You have the obligation and the responsibility to warn. First Timothy, the 1st chapter, verse 3-7 says, teach no other doctrine. 2 Timothy, the 4th chapter, verse number 2, says, preach the word. 2 Timothy 2:15, study to be, to show yourself, proven unto God a workman that needeth not to be ashamed. 2 Peter, the 3rd chapter, verse number 1, and that gets back to what I was talking about a little bit ago, stir up your pure minds by way of remembrance. And when you stir something, you heard it, you originally knew it, but you get in there and you create some, I don't know what, motion, friction, thinking. That is, it's got to go on in the pot. And he said, I want your minds to do that. And that, as far as leadership is concerned, I think that's what we need to do within the congregation. And tackle some of the subjects that where inroads are made, as far as the church is concerned. It is a privilege to be able to teach and preach. It is not something that you were necessarily born and you have the right and the obligation to fulfill. Being a member of the Lord's Church is sobering. Being in a leader position is an opportunity. And it's something that God has bestowed upon individuals. And it is a responsibility not to be taken lightly. To the younger individuals, Titus 2nd chapter verse number 10. He specifically singles out the younger men. And he says, I want you to be an example in doctrine showing uncorruptness. Now in the young people of today, the young people era is change. I want to do things differently. I want to whatever. He says that it's important for you as young men to be noticed, to have within your characteristics doctrine of uncorruptness. First Corinthians 16th chapter verse 13. Stand fast within the faith. Matthew the 7th chapter verses 13 and 14, and he continues, he says, there's only going to be a few. I don't want to limit God. I don't know what a few is, but I know what a few is compared to many. And he says, there is false doctrine. There's going to be false doctrine. And there's only a few that are going to go to hell. Luke the 12th chapter, verse number 48. He says, of whom much is given, much is going to be required. If he has given you the abilities and the position of leadership, then you're going to be held, James the 3rd chapter, verse number 1, you're going to be held to a standard. We need to be aware of that. 1 Corinthians the 4th chapter, verse number 2, it's required in servants that a man be found faithful. And with that, time's run out. But anybody got questions or comments before we quit? Thank you.